This is the You Heard Me podcast. My name is Dez. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. You feel like I'm mad at you right now? I'm trying to get better on my tone. I've been accused at times of it's not what I say, it's how I say it. Does that tone make it seem like I'm annoyed? I'm not. I am annoyed by the fact that I'm sick. We now have, this is the third September of You Heard Me podcast, and I'm pretty sure in every single late September episode, early October episode, you can hear me with a cold at some point. I don't know why, but I get sick this time of year, every single year. It's been like 7 years in a row now. It's out of control. Like anywhere from just the sniffles all the way to like in the hospital, oh shit, I have pneumonia or some shit like that, right? So, hoping that we get over this relatively quickly. Whole house was sick, and now here I go. But this is the You Heard Me podcast. This is Dez. It is Wednesday, September the 21st. It is a lunch hour podcast. Yeah, I'm powering through today on a sick day. I'd appreciate it if y'all followed at You Heard Me Dog, at You Heard Me DAWG on Instagram. And I hope that you become a patron and you join the Gold Club. Patreon.com/YHMP. Be a patron. Support the show. It's a weird time with the cold, with everything. You know, I'm having to come down a little bit from anger with the Ravens. You know, it's Wednesday now. I don't know how many people in the flock are over the loss on Sunday. I'm not. And this is the cross you bear when you're a rabid football fan is, you know, you allow an entertainment entity to determine your mood for several months out of the year. But nah, man, jokes aside, just getting back into it, man, getting back into the swing of shit, man. Had a really long stretch for the last month between work and school starting and just events and soccer and this and that. I just been all over the place, man. I just been busy as hell, running around, doing a lot more traveling and off-site stuff. I've all set on being in the city of Washington, D.C. for at least 4 or 5 months, man. I was down there so much in the last couple of weeks. Yeah, man, I'm just kind of looking to reset a little bit. One thing that I did do last week was I recorded a special episode, which was, video game centric. So for all of my listeners who fuck with Madden, I got my Madden review coming. And pretty soon I'm going to have my 2K one. It was supposed to be both in the same, but I, you know, how I do anybody who knows me talking about Madden, we end up going in. So that's like an hour. And I wasn't sure how much time I was going to have before my allotment rolled over. And I would rather have gotten out regular episode than the Madden episode with my last hour and change that I have. But I also wanted to make sure that the episode was good and not me coughing and hacking the whole time. So now that I'm coughing, and I'm sure I'm going to start coughing since I just talked about it, but you know, my coughing is holding off some, I should be in good shape to finish this one out, yo. But you know, it's funny, especially, and I may have talked about this before, man, but this time of year, is always very nostalgic to me. You know, and I'm noticing my kid is, he's at the age now where I start to have a lot more like day-to-day memories of what it was like at that age. And it's just, it's brilliant when you see your kid doing the shit that you used to do, you know, good and bad. It's brilliant when you see your kid be a totally different person than you, good and bad, right? When I say brilliant, I just mean it's like it's just amazing, you know. And it's really hard, in the heat of things and in the stress of these different situations to appreciate the beauty of it and, you know, the full circled nature of it. But it's something that I've tried to do more and more, and just kind of smell the roses a little bit better. Taking the good with the bad, you know, vice versa. Speaking in cliches right now, you know, win some, lose some. You know, not the size of fighting the dog. give me one sec here. But I remember this time of year a lot because, you know, I don't know about y'all, but I was a new kid at multiple different schools during my primary school education. When I was up in Boston, well, more specifically Cambridge, when I was up in that area, I went to two different schools, actually three different schools. I went to a school for pre-K, that I didn't go there for kindergarten, went to another school for kindergarten, first and second grade. Then I went to a different school for third and fourth grade. Then I told y'all last week in the last episode about my mom getting remarried and us moving. So then, you know, I end up moving again. I actually remember going down to PG County, and I went there like before we moved here. I went down there to take some entrance exams for, you know, some school in like Largo or some shit like that, but I didn't end up going. I don't even know if I mentioned properly either PG County, in the last episode I talked about it, but PG County is Prince George's County, Maryland, which is one of the counties of Maryland that borders Washington, D.C. So they associate way more with the D.C. metro area. If you ever hear, and this is only for my out-of-town listeners who might not be hip, the DMV area, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, that's the DMV. Baltimore, about 30, 40 miles up the road from D.C. And pretty much anybody who's from or has spent any extensive time in Baltimore will tell you that Baltimore is not part of the DMV. You know, it might be from a whatever, but it's you know, in practice and kind of culturally, it's very much not. It's hard to explain to anybody who's not from around here because you kind of sound similar. It's like there's enough similarities for an out-of-towner, but, you know, as soon as you go to D.C., if you're from Baltimore, like, you realize you're playing an away game immediately. I don't know if it's as big of a difference now, but my whole point is, man, you know, I came down here thinking I was going to go to that. Then I came to Baltimore, went to a school for fifth grade, went to a school from that district for the first half of sixth grade. Then we moved and I went to a different school for the back half of sixth grade, the rest of middle school, and then the high school in that area as well. So, you know, by the time I got into sixth grade, I'd already been in four or five different schools. And, you know, it was always a very interesting learning opportunity for me on the fly. And where, you know, my son, you know, he goes to an independent school, and, you know, there's kids from all over who go to his school, like all over the state, not even just the area, like all over the whole state. So there's an energy at that school that's different than the energy at a zone school that most of us went to, because everybody doesn't kind of have the same experience. You know what I mean? And when I'm listening to him and we go to back to school night, and, you know, there's a bunch of other kids out there who are, you know, you know, new, or, you know, they might be new to each other, like they never had classes before or something like that. You know, the welcome committee and stuff like that is really interesting in there. And, you know, you get feedback from some of the other parents and shit. And like, evidently my kid is pretty cool about like welcoming new kids into the school and like showing them around and stuff like that. You know, I just told y'all about the, you know, the story of my man Malik, rest in peace, Malik. But, you know, I told y'all how the story between me and him was about, like, I met him, you know, before he came to the school online, we met. And then, you know, I kind of ushered him in, you know, into the social aspect, you know. And you know, like I said, man, when you see your kid and you know you get to back to school night and one of the other parents is like, "Wait, y'all are such and such as dad?" It's like, "Oh, wow." Like, you know, my kid, this is his first year. He talks about how, you know, DJ's always, he's always letting letting him sit at the lunch table with him, and he's really appreciative, man. He's been, you know, and I'm like, "Wow, you know, that's great to hear." Because I think back to some of my friends at the new schools that I ended up going to over the years, and just, you know, you always remember those couple of kids that showed you love. You know what I mean? And where I, you know, at least up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you know, it's very different than in Baltimore County, because Baltimore County is massive, right? Like, just the amount of land area it is, it's huge. And, you know, there's, how many people in the county? Like, damn near a million people in the county, like across the whole county, I think. But maybe it's a million people between the county and the city combined. Nah, that just doesn't sound right. But there's hundreds of thousands of people at the very least in the county, right? And, you know, you can, you know, you don't ever really leave your county or your area, because each area has its own schools, unless you go to a magnet school. But in Cambridge, you know, it's a city. So, you know, there's 12 schools in Cambridge, which is, you know, maybe, what's Cambridge, maybe like 6 square miles max, maybe 4 or 5 square miles max, maybe. Cambridge is not that big. But there's a ton of schools because it's very, you know, population dense. There's, you know, maybe 200,000 people in Cambridge probably. And, you know, when you go to school, you know, you don't necessarily go to the school that's closest to you. Like, you can choose what school you want to go to a degree. At least that's how it was in the 90s. And I remember, you know, there was a, you know, because I went to these after school programs and stuff, whether it was through the Y or through just like local stuff, there's a place called the Community Art Center. So if you went to the Art Center and you're somehow here in this podcast, I'll probably remember you and everybody who was in there. But, you know, you meet kids from around the city, from after school programs, from sports, you know, you play baseball, you play basketball, you're at the parks, you know, you're wherever. So, you know, kids from other schools, you know what I mean? And, you know, if you're from there and your family's from there, then, you know, y'all got cousins and uncles and, you know, y'all know each other. It's a small, you know, situation. So it's not even like going to a new school up there. It was like, "Oh shit, this is my man Roberto or some shit, or there's my man fucking Mikey or whatever like that." Like, yeah, I already know these kids. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not as much of an assimilation. And it's not really like that with a lot of the private schools and shit like that. Unless it's a, you know, somebody's like, "Hey, my kid goes here. I think your kid would like it here too." You know, apply one of those numbers. But, you know, I mean, it's just a lot different, man. So when I'm looking back and I'm like, "Oh shit, man, like, why does the beginning of the school year, the beginning of football season, the beginning of college football season, the beginning of what's going to become the fall and basketball season and all of these things, that, like, why are they always so memorable to me?" And I think that this time of year is where it's so important for students and parents and everybody like that to really kind of come back to balance, right? Because the summer, everybody is kind of wilding, right? Like, the summer, and I guess I'll also give the caveat of, like, I can only say this is true in places where winter exists for real, right? Because if you live in California, you live in Florida, Arizona, somewhere where it's like, it's just hot all year, or at least it's warm all year, and like 70 degrees in January is like chilly to y'all, then it's not the same, like, ramp up and wind down and all of that like it is in the East Coast city, or, you know, a Northwest city or somewhere Midwest where there's not fucking constant warmth. So when you have the kid or the family and shit, and you're trying to figure out, all right, well, how do I occupy my summer? How do I pack in vacations or trips, or, you know, how do we go do stuff? How do we make sure that we're being active, whatever it is? Like, that type of shit is hard to coordinate. You know what I mean? And it requires a lot of effort. It requires a lot of money. It requires a lot of fucking concentration and shit. And I think because of how we treat the summer, you know, we kind of have it in our mind from the time that we start school that summer is vacation time. You know, I don't know if, you know, for those of you who work in the business world, you know, most of the time your budgets are going to turn over is either going to be in July or October. So, you know, you end up spending half of the summer like, all, you know, like from business, like, well, we can't really do shit until we get our budget, you know, or we're wrapping up the fiscal year. So, you know, it's just everything is, and then we can chill once we're done the wrap up shit or, you know, whatever it is. It's like, it's always us working towards like when we don't have to work anymore. And I think that that's the part of the beginning of the school year, as nerdy as it sounds, that I always was excited about because I was not a good student. You know what I'm saying? I was always a very intelligent student and I did what I needed to do, but I was never like a diligent student once you started to have to actually try hard. And, you know, I think that when I got to the beginning of the year, I was always telling myself, like, man, it's going to be the year. I'm writing all my homework assignments down in my planner, yo. Like, this is going to be the year. My binder's not going to look crazy. My book bag's not going to have all the flyers that was supposed to go home at the bottom of it. Like, she's not going to get me again this year. Like, I'm going to do better. Like, I swear to God, every year I had that mentality. And then you get, like, after those first couple of days of school when you don't really have homework like that, you're like, ooh, I'm in there. And then, you know, starts to get real around now. Sorry. I feel bad for my son and his peers because, like, my freshman year of college in 2007 was the first time that I ever had, like, a digital chalkboard or I think it was actually called Blackboard. But like where a certain amount of the class was administered through the computer or like through a website. And it's weird that now that that's just school, you know what I mean? Like now I think I talked about this before, but like, it was weird. Like I felt like most kids, if damn near every kid in Baltimore County Public Schools used to get halfway through the marking period, you would get an interim grade report. Like, this is like your halfway mark report card. And it's just so crazy because, like, I just never got them. Like, I don't know why they just never gave me an interim, but, like, the whole time I was in middle school and high school, I just never got interims. It was crazy, right? Like, I get home on interim day, and I'm going to be like, where's your interim? I just be like, yo, I don't even know. Like, that's crazy. Like, I'll never get even the years when I did have a good interim, I just had to eat that shit and be like, well, if I say that I got this one, I'm gonna have to show my bad ones. So I never got one. And I, you know, you get that reality check of like, oh shit, like now my parents or, you know, whoever, you know, they know how well or how not well I'm doing in school right now. And I don't know why there was always that bone in my body that was just like, yo, but this is dumb. Like, you don't actually have to do this if you don't want to, because it's dumb. I was always like, from the time I was like 9 years old, that was my philosophy in school. And then you get deeper and deeper into school and you realize like, damn, yo, like if I hadn't have thought that this was dumb, this would be a lot easier than it is, because it doesn't matter how smart I am. I'm not good at sitting down and doing work. You know what I mean? Like, it takes effort for me to do that. And I always try to, you know, relate it to my son because he feels that way and he's felt that way ever since he's been in fucking like first grade where, you know, he always does his classwork. But, you know, whenever it's a project or a homework assignment or something, he just rushes straight through so he can be done and not have to do it anymore. Like, he would literally, because he, you know, he doesn't really get any screen time like that during the week anymore. He's proven that he can't handle it. But, you know, he's kind of like me. Like, he would rather lay on the floor of his bedroom and throw a Nerf ball up and down in his hand until it's time to go to bed than fucking, like, study or, like, pick up a book or make a model or do something that he has to do for school. And it's crazy because I'm a mean nerd when it comes to a lot of shit. And I will sit there and binge out on information, on articles and essays and journals and shit like that, if it's something that I'm really into, but it has to be on my terms before I, like, that bone in my body gets activated. You know what I'm saying? And that's not good, right? Like, I'm acknowledging that's bad. But I have to know that about myself as a dad to figure out how I can tap in with my son and give him the direction that he needs, right? But where both of us never had a problem, well, I can't say never, but we're both, where he has something that it took me a little while to build up in athletics, which is like real hustle, right? He hustles hard, but it's because I've been on his ass from day one. Run, run, go, go, you know, hustle, hustle, you know, all of that shit. And he does. He does not have to be told to hustle. He doesn't have to be told to jog off the field. He doesn't have to be told a lot of these things now, but he has to be told every single day, did you brush your teeth? Did you do your homework? Did you put deodorant on? Did you take the trash out? Did you do your dishes? Did you fucking, like, you know, I'm just thinking of all of his chores as like his daily to-do list and his daily hygiene list and his daily preparations for school list. And did you, you know, submit all your assignments? I know you did them, but did you press submit so that you actually get your credit? Stuff like that, that we're having these sorts of growing pains. So when I talk to him and I'm like, hey, man, you hustle on the field, you know, when you're on the field, whatever sport you're playing, when you're on the court, like whatever, you know, whatever you're doing, you're playing hard. You know, I don't see you doing a lot of standing around and inspecting. Like, I see you going after it. And I said, when you're in school, taking that extra time to show your work a little bit more in your math or to take some notes on something that somebody tells you or to highlight the answer. I mean, not highlight the answer, highlight the question, you know, and make sure that you can set your variables when you're doing your math and stuff like that. I'm like, that's hustling in school. Like, that's hustling. You got to hustle. The same way that you will run to chase that loose ball needs to be the same way that you will run to, you know, to finish your reading before you do, like whatever corny shit I can say that will hopefully resonate somewhere. I need that to happen. Because I can't tell him straight up about, like, this is so important for you to know because you'll use it in life. He's not going to understand that, right? What he understands is when we turn Jeopardy on, I'm racking up 8,000-9,000 minimum before Final Jeopardy. Minimum before Final Jeopardy. Unless we're talking art and fucking, like, Asian rivers or some shit like that. Like, I'm fucking holding my own most of the time. You know, he like, man, I think you're so smart, Dad. I'm like, I'm not smart. Like, I tell him that all the time to try to, you know, be like, man, I'm not smart. You know, I'm not. At least I don't think I am. I know some people who are way smarter than I am. Or more knowledgeable than I, like people whose brains work stronger than mine does. And he'll be, I don't know, man. You know, it seems like you know a little something about everything. I'm like, but that's a reflection of how little work I actually do. I'm like, I know about it because I can't ever pay attention to nothing. Don't say that to him. But these are the things where I'm like, man, your kids see right the fuck through you, yo. I saw right through my parents in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? And I feel like if you have a kid, sorry. If you have a kid who demonstrates next level maturity about certain things, I feel like it's your responsibility to treat them like that. Right? It's a hard blend though, because you have to find the way to talk to them in a way that they'll respond and respect your words. But you also have to be cautious of not understanding the other variables that will get tweaked when you mess with one. So, like, if you're assuming that because your kid shows that they have a capacity for empathy that a lot of other kids don't have, you know, they can put themselves in somebody else's shoes, right? And try to change their behaviors based on how they think their behaviors or their actions could affect somebody else. It's like a kid can do that while also, like, not understanding the selfishness of like eating a whole box of cereal and then putting the empty box back into the pantry, right? Like those are the two things where you, in your mind, logically as a parent, or you know, and as an authority figure or whatever for that kid, you're like, wait, you understand, like thinking about other people. So why the fuck would you put this empty cereal box back into the pantry? You know what I mean? Like I'm just thinking of something off the top of my head, but I think you kind of understand where I'm going. It's like, you know, you got to be cautious of just, you have to, it's just this constantly evolving balance of how much credit do I give them and how fair is it for me to make assumptions? You know what I mean? If your kid is 14, 15 years old, you know, you have a pretty good idea of who they are and what they're capable of at that point, right? Like 14, 15, you know, their core is set. You just need to make refinements off of it, right? And I'm, you know, I was telling y'all last week about when I went to the function at the church last weekend or maybe it's 2 weekends ago, and was speaking on the panel there. But, you know, one of the things that we talked about was this tendency, especially in the black community, the American black community, to put your kids out once they hit, you know, 18, 21, whatever it is, versus other cultures, which are, you know, which include, this is the reason I'm making the distinction of American black, because I think Africans, most Asian cultures, most Middle Eastern cultures, and I can't speak too much about the European ones, but like Jewish cultures and stuff, or households, you know, they don't force anybody to leave. Like, if anything, it's kind of like the goal is for the whole family to live together, you know, or you know, if not in the same house, in the same neighborhood, but really in the same house. You know, the biggest animated movie of the last couple of years, Encanto, was all about that, wasn't it? But I'm saying that for real, because I just think that, you know, there's a, I'm saying this in the spirit of, you know, we have a tendency, I think, and we can break down the tendencies more and more per different demographic group. But I'm saying in general, I think in this generation of America, I think a lot of us have a tendency to grossly overestimate, you know, certain sides and grossly underestimate in other sides, children's capacities, right? When you think back to what you learned about the Great Depression, right? And the Dust Bowl and the 30s, right? And you think of all of the just horrifying stories that you heard that came out of that time frame. But, you know, you have so many other stories of that people carried, you know, and a lot of these older people are dead now or dying, but, you know, the stories you would hear of people who grew up in that time, you know, and kids were, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old in that time. And, you know, how much responsibilities those kids had to their whole entire households and their whole families. You know, I remember being in, you know, 99 and 2000, being 8, you know, 9, 10 years old and going grocery shopping, like for the house myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, my mother would give me, you know, she would give me the list and it would be like, you know, $40. And I would take the cart and wheel that bitch all the way up the hill to the metro or, you know, wherever. Or she would let me go in and shop, you know. I'd be like, all right, I'm going to go grocery shopping. You can, you know, go to the other store or whatever. And I'll go bang the grocery shopping. And I'd be like 10 years old. You know, and I don't know when everything changed or like what the last kid to get kidnapped was that said, no, you can't do this no more. But like, you know, I was talking to my auntie and, you know, my auntie is 72, 73 years old, something like that at this point. And her granddaughter, my cousin, is what? How old is she? Like, maybe 14, 15 years old now. And, you know, Monty's like, and I let her out the car to go drop this, you know, drop this off across the street while I was double parked. And she didn't know how to cross the street. I was like, what? She was like, yeah, she just was standing there like scared. Like, I don't know what to do. And, you know, you see, I've made this comment before. You know, the narrative is that, you know, kids are just all inside on the phones all day. And I was just saying a couple weeks ago on the show how many kids I see outside playing still, especially in, you know, the lower income group you go to. But, you know, I think that it's important for us to remember, like, not just in America's history, but right now in parts all over the world, whether it's right or wrong, you have young kids, you know, single digit age kids who work. Some of them are fucking slaves, but you know, you have a good portion of them who work for, you know, no wages, minimum wages, and they provide support to their family from, you know, the time they're 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. I mean, you hear it's become a cliche at this point about the, you know, some 6-year old in China just made your iPhone for you or stitched those Jordans together for you. But this is the reality, you know, and it was the reality here. And especially as families have gotten smaller and smaller, I think there's even less of a responsibility on a lot of kids to be more responsible early. And what does that mean? You know, when we know on the one hand that it's not good for children's psyche to have to be mature beyond their years. It's not good for their emotional development or whatever it is. But I think that right now we're having a really bad reconciliation with the fact that our best practices in parenting right now are not best practices in preparing your kid to be successful in the United States if you can't provide them with their opportunities yourself, right? So if you have a huge investment portfolio and you have money and you can have, and your kid can do whatever they want to do for most of their adult life, or, you know, say you can support your kid into their 30s and 40s, then, you know, you can raise your kid to be as ideal or within an as ideal Dr. Lipschitz fucking parenting situation as you want to. And I'm sure that the kid will still be okay as far as whether they can make it in the world. But we're seeing on opposite ends of the spectrum how this shit is not necessarily good at preparing them for being successful in this country. If you have a whole bunch of kids who, you know, the world makes excuses for you, right? Or I mean, not the world, their world makes excuses for them, right? Oh, he's hyperactive. Oh, he has anger issues. Oh, he doesn't like loud noises. Oh, he needs to be in control. Oh, he only likes to eat chicken nuggets. All of this shit that could be very, very, very legitimate and could be very much out of that kid's control. All of that shit is still going to be held against him when he tries to make it in the workforce, when she tries to make it in the dating game, when they try to make it with a friend, or they try to do something that's going to require them to shut the fuck up and just do, right? Like, I think of myself, and it's been more and more exposed, and I'm learning more and more about my ADHD, right? I don't give a fuck about my ADHD my rent don't give a fuck about my ADHD. My phone bill don't give a fuck about my ADHD. When I'm sitting there looking into that computer screen, sending out, you know, whatever dozenth or hundredth of that same day that I've done for my alleged day job, and I want nothing more than to shoot myself in the head to stop the suffering, I remember, oh shit, if I don't do this, I'm homeless. And then I just do it. And it sucks to a degree, but I'm fortunate and I'm happy that I have that option. And I created that option. You know? And it's tough because, like I said, I'm looking at my kid and I'm like, man, I don't want you to not be as prepared for this shit as you should be. So I'm going to do my part to get you prepared. But then you realize it's like, oh, fuck. Like, I can only get you but so much right now, dog. Like, I can only instill but so much. I can only demonstrate and provide but so much. So much of this is going to come from your own trial and error and your own experiences and your own mistakes and successes. And what do you want to feel more? You know? The stimuli is different for kids now. 30, 40 years ago, your kid wasn't getting this many influences. Didn't have these many different images of success or of positivity or of the way that it should go. Had nobody who was famous for doing nothing except being famous. You had nobody who was being made famous for fucking other people over or fucking with other people. There was no precedent for a lot of this shit that the kids have to deal with today. This takes me back from where I said in the beginning about my own nostalgia. Why does the beginning of the school year stand out so much? You get to reinvent yourself. You get to restart to a degree. If you had an embarrassing thing happen last year, you get to start over this year. You get to overcome that. You get to do, you had a bad season last year. Or you guys lost in the playoffs. You know, you get to start over and try to win a championship. And, you know, whatever it is, you get a chance. I'm finding myself right now stuck between completely reverting to the old school. This isn't about your fun. This isn't about anything except getting shit done. This isn't about anything. This isn't about anything that you want it to be about. This is about what you need it to be about. Right? Combine that with a little do as I say, not as I do. Sprinkle a little, well, if you really loved me, you would do this. You know, all the tricks that our parents used on us, that their parents used on them, so on and so forth. But what I do think that's missing from today's upbringing and best practices in parenting is the acknowledgement of what I said earlier. The world don't give a fuck. It don't give a fuck about you, about your whatever. It don't care. It's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people. You know? Takes a little while to accept that, especially if you're being brought up in a way that makes you the most important thing, which is a tough line to walk for a parent who, especially when you're a parent of an only child like I am, you know, it's like, fuck, you know, how do I make you not entitled? How do I make you not spoiled? How do I make you not feel like anybody owes you anything? But also make you feel like you deserve shit. Make you feel like you're worthy of shit, right? That's the toughest part of it. That's where you get to the psychology of the class warfare, of the, you know, the Willie Lynch letter and all of the ways that the image of blackness and of black people has manifested itself into internalized depression, into, you know, that's the whole idea of not feeling like you belong or like you're allowed to be there. I can explain that for myself. Because, like, I feel that when I'm in the corporate side. And I feel like all black people, especially, who don't feel like that, you're in for a rude awakening. And whether this is me being defeatist, whether this is me not being as pan whatever or pro whatever as I need to be, I'm saying that this is me hedging my own bets and saying I'm not going to be disappointed when I realize I'm dispensable and I'm more dispensable than somebody else might be. I'm not going to be disappointed by the fact that I'm being treated differently, or I don't have as much leeway, or they're willing to write me up about something that they're not willing to even reprimand somebody else about at all. You know, I could say that and say, I'm not, I know how the game goes. So I'm going to play the game in a way that I think is going to best suit me. And if that means that when we're talking about culture shit in the office, and people are asking real questions about, like, your real feelings about things, me, Desmond, 9 times out of 10, I'm not talking. 9 times out of 10, I'm just being quiet. And I'm saying, what do you want us to do next? I don't fucking care. I'm not here to care. I'm here to get my money and leave. White people can care at work. They're there for more than the money. They're there for the fulfillment. They're there for the challenge to play, because when you know, again, we're talking about a certain cut of people. But if you're a white person who has made it in corporate America, the odds are you've had help, like material help from the beginning. So the work that you're doing and the amount of money that you're making does not register the same as somebody who you know, maybe you had somebody buy you a pair of shoes. Maybe you had somebody pay an application fee for you. Maybe you even had somebody put a down payment on a car for you or something, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 transaction, something like that. Right? So if that's you, when you get to that good job where you're making, you know, good money for you, then you realize, like, oh shit, like, I'm going to own this. I'm going to do my best. I'm not going to be meek about my performance. But when it comes to the cultural shit, when it comes to, like, people are starting to get a little out of pocket, when we're getting a little fun, when we're getting a little crazy in meetings, or, you know, the joke is going far and stuff like that, when you realize, as the black person, it's probably better for me to not engage in this. Like, it's probably better for me to just kind of smile and giggle and put my head down or turn my Zoom camera off or something, because they're going to remember what I said and they're going to make me the bad guy. It's not going to be about what everybody was doing. That's my thought process. So I just don't. And I just stay employed. But I'm not looking for my fulfillment there. Right? But I should be on those levels, right? Like, I should feel like, with all this time and energy that I spend in the workplace, that I should be rewarded for. I should get something out of it. I should be recognized for it. Like, there should be something on the other side of that in addition to the paycheck, because they ask for us to invest more than, you know what I'm saying? It's like, but I feel like it would be foolish. You know, and I'm not trying to make this solely racial. I'm not trying to make it solely that. But even, like, the white dudes who don't really give a fuck, or the white chicks who are just kind of there, you know, you even will see more buy-in, or, like, more, you know, they'll get mad about, like, what? They only ordered fucking one box of muffins for breakfast? Like, what the fuck? We only got, you know, it's like you'll be seeing people who don't give a fuck about the company at all, who do shit jobs, like, get pissed. Well, how come they get a pizza party and we don't? You know what I'm saying? Like, I have so many examples of shit like that that I could think of. You know, it's probably real funny working with me, actually, as I'm thinking about it. If you ever worked with me in an alleged day job and you see how much I don't give a fuck about little dumb shit. It's like, how does he keep on, like, ascending? How does he keep on having these positions, allegedly? How does he keep on, like, how do all the bosses know him and like him? And he just doesn't give a fuck so much. I'm like, that's why. You know what I mean? Because y'all are sitting up here worried about this dumb shit, and I'm telling them about what I can do for the business. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. And when I'm trying to figure out how to get across to my kid is, man, how do I get him to care enough about himself and his own performance that it doesn't matter where he is? He's going to bring it and he's going to shine, but he's not shining to shine within that institution or organization or whatever. He's shining because no matter what he touches, it turns to gold. And that's his mentality. You know, that's my mentality. I'm not right all the time. I fuck a lot of shit up. Like this episode where I'm rambling on and on. No, I'm talking shit. This episode's fucking great. No, man, I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of shorts you kind of have to have, you know, in order to just not be hurt by the shit, you know? So I kind of try to spoon feed my son the second class citizenship shit in a way that does not make him upset about it, but motivates him to overcome it in the ways that he can, right? I understand that there's a lot of, like I said, my pro or pan or afro or whatever card is completely at stake right now by talking like this, I'm sure. I don't care. Because the reality is, if you want to play in those spaces, you have to accept less. As it is right now, you have to. If you want to play in those spaces. If you want to create those spaces, you might not have to. But I think if it was as easy as that, then there wouldn't be as many of those spaces that people would have to play in without taking a loss. And again, the loss, you know, you could be making just as much money. You could be, you know, have just the same title, reserve parking spot, the whole nine. But if you got to start whispering when you talk about something, or you can't have a certain conversation out in the open, then you don't get everything that you could get. Because when I see the white bosses move, they move however the fuck they want most of the time. They talk about what they want to talk about. And they'll be the ones that'll be like, all right, let's go ahead and rein it back in, guys. All right, I'm going to get us back on track here, you know. What's more important to you? The perceived equality in those situations, or that you getting yours and you getting the fuck up out of there? You know, in my 20s, I was really like, if you cut me, I would bleed the colors of the company I worked for, because I believed that the only way that I was going to be able to get to that point where I felt like I was getting respect, I was getting recognition, and I was getting the money to match what I brought to the table, I thought that was the mentality I had to have. And because I told y'all how much I hate work and school and shit like that, imagine somebody who hates doing homework and hates doing essays and shit like that, that they have to do. Imagine you put them in an office job and tell them to go be the best at it. But they do. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, for me personally, it was really hard. Like, it took a lot more effort for me to do the work in the first place because of all the preparation that I had not done from fourth grade and all throughout the rest of school. You know, the kid who's you know, banging spark notes before a test on a book, the kid who's copying homework off of somebody else pretty much every fucking day. I used to do fake homework on the bus on the way to school. I would find the math problems. And especially when you were in a higher level class where the teacher would assign you the questions that had the answers in the back of the book, because they trusted that you just wanted to, that you would do the work and you wanted to know the answers so you could figure out what you did wrong. Not like you would just know the answers and just put them on the homework and then just make fake work. And like it took me so much more effort to be lazy than it would have to just do the work. I didn't know that at the time. I would not have been able to understand it at the time. But as I get into this space and I'm like, fuck, like, if I actually built up the ability to read fast with comprehension, stuff that I don't like, then it wouldn't take me so long and it wouldn't take this much effort for me to turn over this contract or this best practice document or this standard operating procedure or whatever it is that I'm responsible for in this stage. It wouldn't be so much of a lift for me. It makes sense for me now, where I understand why people want a college graduate in certain spots. It does not have anything to do with your intelligence. It's everything to do with your ability to follow instructions and finish tasks. That's what the degree proves. You understand what I'm saying? So where I'm looking at all of this, and I'm looking at, you know, the quote of, you know, be who you needed when you were growing up, And I'm like, fuck, I can't convince this kid that finding the area of this one square within all these other squares is that important. I can't convince him that by itself. But I can convince him by putting him around people who did finish college, who did go to really good schools, who did get really good jobs, who started higher on the totem pole than I'm even at now after, you know, 10, 12 years working in the field. All of these things. You know? And in his generation, you know, there's not, I don't think, as much of an emphasis on, like, building up your belly-to-belly reputation and your name, because you have to have two names, your digital name and your real life name. You know, that wasn't really as much of a thing for us until the very end of high school. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. I didn't always allow the fact that I didn't have all of my shit that I wanted to be the reason why I didn't have no swag. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, how do you teach your kid to have swag? You can't teach swag. You teach habits. You teach standards. You know what I'm saying? Like, you teach routines. And that, I think, will get the results that create the swag. And this is what I keep on trying to tell my son. When he steps on those soccer fields, especially now that he's gone up a level and he's one of the only kids on his team that really, really goes hard. When he steps around them soccer fields and in that youth sports network, they know who the fuck he is. Like, when he steps on the field, whether it's at the clinics, at the camps, at the fucking, you know, the trial days and shit like that, when he walks on the field with his slides on and his fucking cleats in his hand, and they know what the fuck time it is. You see everybody get excited. You see all the coaches be like, oh, you DJ's here now. We good. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know that that's important to him, and I know he can feel it. And I tell him, I'm like, you notice how people react to you when you're around the field? I said, it's because you went 3 seasons in a row being the best player, or, the, you know, a 1A, 1B deal with any player in the league or on your team or whatever the case. Like, any single coach would have wanted you. Any single coach actively wants you. You're one of the like you're one of the first kids that gets picked when they draft. All of this is the fact. But it comes from you actually producing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got, you know, 60 goals in 3 seasons or whatever the ridiculous number is. Like, that's real. That's you, those are your stats. You know what I'm saying? And I've watched you play every single game but 2 or 3 of them. And I see what you do out there. You see what you do out there. You know what you do out there. You hear them other kids, you know, they start talking trash in the beginning, and then the trash don't really fucking continue. How are you going to talk trash down 4-0? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the shit that I'm able to show him. So I'm like, all right, you see, we come out to this field when it's 100 degrees in the middle of the fucking day in the summertime, and we train. And you're running fucking suicides and shuffling and doing all these shits, and it's just us on this field. You don't see no other kids in the league on this field right now. It's us. This is the difference. This is why you're better. You know what I'm saying? I don't have the right way to, like, do that for him with school. I'm struggling with that, you know? So I try to correlate it to the sports. I'm like, hey, man, like, we work harder in soccer than your teammates do. Therefore, you are better. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, how do I make that work for you? How do I make you care to do that in school? You know what I'm saying? Ain't nobody, you know, 100 people cheering as loud as they can for him when he turns in his homework. You know? It's the reality. And as a former athlete, I understand. You know, that rush, that high is different. So I'm trying to explain to him, like, how much one bleeds into the other, and, like, how much he needs to, you know, be on top of his school shit, and, you know, in case the sports doesn't go right, or, you know, so that the sports never has to be the only thing and all of this other shit. And I'm just, you know, he's going to do what he's going to do. You know, he's going to do what he's going to do. And I would rather preserve his trust in me into his older years. So, and his mom too, especially her. I mean, that's really his confidant, but it's with an asterisk because he's at the age where, as his peers would probably say, Big Cap is involved. And I catch his ass lying to 4K so many times, just him just embellishing stories or like removing the shit that he did. I'm like, well, how do you get to hear from there? Like, but what about this? You know, so he doesn't confide in me as much. I got a few more questions. I need a little bit more verification of some of these stories that he wants to provide. So he, you know, his mom is the one who gets all of the kind of the nitty gritty shit. I get the highlights and then whatever I dig for. But you know, I think that's the shit that is going to make him respect me as he gets older. Is damn, he realized my dad, he's sharp as fuck. Like, you know, he don't really play. Like, I can't really play with him. And then once he stops looking at his parents as his adversaries from or between him and, you know, whatever he wants to do at his, you know, 15, 16, whatever the age is, where we get into that head bumping situation. You know what I mean? Like, I think that it'll end up coming back to, man, my dad was solid. He was saying some shit that was real the whole time. And, you know, now for the rest of the time that I'm fortunate enough to have him on earth with me, I'm going to really make sure that I listen to him and I take his advice seriously. The difference with him and me and our upbringing is that, you know, my dad wasn't able to be in my house every day. You know what I'm saying? So it's like we didn't have, it wasn't that constant, you know, day in, day out raising of a child shit. It's like, you know, you get weekend dad shit, which is very impactful, but it's not the same. You know what I'm saying? It's not the same as every day you see that dude, ups and downs, highs and lows, ebbs and flows, back to speaking in expressions and shit like that. You know, you win some, you lose some. Everybody has their ups and downs. But you see it for real and you see it in real time and you see the response. You know, when my parents would fight when I was little, you know, my dad would get in the car and leave, or my mom would get in the car and leave, depending on whose house I was at. And the other one would be one of two things. They would either just like, well, my dad, he very rarely would like still be mad about it. Like, he would just be like, God, golly, man. Just anyway, man, you try and go to the basketball court, man. Let's go to Good Times or some shit like, you know. And my mom would, you know, it would be like the next fucking 4 hours of her just being mad at me, damn near, like shitty with me when I ain't even do nothing. You know what I mean? And it's just like, you know, but in either one of those situations for me, did I see either one of them like really like process the whole situation and move on from it. You know what I mean? It was always like, well, let me get the fuck away from them. Or they're acting like it didn't happen. Like, those would kind of be the only two speeds. You know what I mean? So my message in all of this, y'all, is if you got a kid who's smart, who's perceptive, who knows what's going on, you're going to need to find something besides just the best practices to tell them. They're not going to want to hear that shit once they've been exposed a little bit, or once they've been able to kind of find some of the chinks in the armor or some of the shit that you're saying. That's bullshit, or is not at least as easily applicable as you make it sound like it is, right? The nostalgia that I feel is one that I'm sure my son will feel one day, and I think that it's our job, just a reminder to parents, you know, we got to make those memories of where it's a movie and the kid hears our voice, or they close their eyes and they see us advising them. And that's where we take it, you know? At You Heard Me, DAWG, at You Heard Me, Dog, on Instagram, fuck Twitter. Appreciate y'all for listening, man. Patreon.com/YHMP, man. Grab a fucking membership, man. Come on, man. I don't see why not. You fuck with the show this heavy, you listening this long, man. You've been listening, right? You're going to keep listening, ain't you? Don't you want to see me fucking do this, not just hear me? need that Patreon, yo. Come on now.